श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि बोल। सो प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू एंड गुड मॉर्निंग फ्रॉम श्री गुद्रुम। Here we are under the shelter of Sri Sri Dayal Nithai Gaur Hari, the presiding deities here. And today we are restarting or continuing, if you will, with our series of English Ishtagosti or Q&A, questions and answers, which had somehow been interrupted for some months due to some other series of lectures we have been giving in Madhuban, regarding Venu Gita and some other topics in between here and there. So at least for some time, maybe till I'm traveling again back to the US in a month or so, where I will be starting another different series of lectures in English, at least for the following month, we will continue with this dynamic of weekly meetings, Q&A on Fridays, in this case in the morning, where all of you are invited to present any question, any doubt, any topic you may like to unfold in the classical confident, if you will, exchange that so much characterizes our tradition, in which the if you will, the topmost jewels of revelation are shared in intimacy, are invoked by proper sincerity and interaction. The Bhagavatam, this is being said by Sonakarishita Sutta Goswami. Because you are humble, you have approached your Gurudev in such a way that he or they have felt inclined to share all their secrets to you. So that particular combination of integrity, humility, sincerity, and eagerness to discover the truth, to embrace the truth, to serve the truth. Sarvatra sarvada, like the Bhagavatam say, our inquiry should be in every time, place, circumstance, in every direction, healthy obsession, if you will, with truth, with trying to ascertain truth today in my life, in this particular situation I am in, so I can get closer and closer to the proper alignment with absolute truth in my life. So Ishtagosti has to do with that, with this very important and crucial combination of questions and answers, inquirer and replier, if you will. The two of them, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, are crucial ingredients in the equation, 50% and 50% each, if you will. So again, all of us, it's a very nice situation in which both parties acknowledge how much we depend on each other, which is a very healthy spirit to keep our Vaishnavism intact, our Vaishnav humility and saralata and simplicity intact, and to remain fully aware, permanently aware, on how much we depend on each other. Like very nicely, once Srila Bhakti Rakakasiddhartha Goswami Maharaj, when he was asked, what's sadhu sangha? He asked, someone asked him for a definition of that, and he gave a very unique reply. Like, it was typical of him, with one particular reference, he was able to draw revelation from some non-shastric source, if you will. So he quoted Napoleon, the famous warrior, if you will, European warrior, and he said that once he was with his army and they had to spend the night in a place which was freezing cold, snow was there, and they had no place to properly camp and sleep and survive during that freezing night. So he created what sometimes, at least Srila Siddhartha Maharaj, called the Napoleon and chair, or Napoleon chair, whatever, however it's correct. What's the meaning of this? He put all his soldiers in a circle and he said, you act as a chair, and you sit on the one who is behind you, and you act as a chair for the one who is in front of you. So each one was sitting on another one. Each one was sustaining one soldier and was being sustained by another one soldier. So in this way, they form a circle in which all of them were sitting so they could sleep and survive that that night, basically. So he replied, that's Sadhu Sangha. So a very interdependent notion, not only in the context of I depend on someone and that's the all-in-all. No, I have some responsibility and some commitment also in connection with my brothers and sisters. So that's basically the spirit of istagosti, of this type of exchange, which of course sometimes may be expressed in terms of superior and inferior, guru, disciple, but also there's lots of place for that to happen among equals. Actually, that's one, a very powerful practice that will promote this proper equality among God siblings, like this Napoleon and Chair example of Sadhu Sangha. So, that said, I don't want to get lost and found in my introduction, but I would like to share some thoughts. So first, to begin with, I have one question that was sent some days ago by a friend of mine from Delhi, from India, Tapu Maya Prabhu. So I asked him if he will give me permission to present his question on this series and even mentioned his name, and he, of course, agreed with that. I mean, I do not mean that everyone has to agree with that, but knowing him, I knew he will. So he agreed. So I'm presenting his question here, and we'll share some thoughts on that. And then I'm seeing that also Namrasa sent one question via chat, so we will continue with that later. So his question, actually, is not only his question, as I think you will realize, but the question of many, if not most, of the devotees. So this is one of the very typical questions that are never, they are always updated in the sense that it's always necessary for most of the devotees to keep asking these questions, at least on certain stage of practice, in order to not misread or misinterpret the practical application of the ideas included herein. So here comes the question. It says, in family life, devotees are asked to be affectionate and not attached. As a family man dealing with women and children, we face a lot more scenarios where the line between attachment and affection becomes blur. I wanted to ask, what's the difference between them? What are their characteristics so that I can understand whether I am affectionate or attached? Also, how to avoid being hard-hearted too, as sometimes, in order to not be attached, we end up becoming hard-hearted. Basically, that's the question of Tapu Maya Prabhu, a very nice one, and again, the very fact that one is making oneself that question is the main part of the answer, if you will. No, it shows one's situation and one's sincerity and one's honest concern about how to deal with a situation that is not so easy to ascertain sometimes. No, so starting to think in terms not of black and white, but again, all the grays in between that have to be properly considered and accommodated. So again, this, as I mentioned, is a classical question, maybe in the top 10 of a perennial Gaudiya Vaishnava inquiries. So and the healthy concern, because if I become too much attached or too much affectionate, and we will of course try to explain what do we mean by those two words and how those two words can mean so many different things. But sometimes the concern is I don't want to get overtly attached, like a synonym of entangled, if you will, but I don't want to become too much hard-hearted or indifferent. I don't want to the extreme of karma, nor I want to go to the extreme of gyan, if you will. I don't want to the extreme of material attachment. I don't want to go to the extreme of detachment, extreme detachment. Because, of course, why this concern comes, because for many people this is not a concern. Most of the people who are basically living a mundane life, they are okay with attachment. I mean, they are not questioning the problem of material attachment. And for those who are embarked upon the path of jnana or vairagya, an extreme renunciation, they have no problem with saying no in every single sense, absolutely, to all the things. But the question naturally arises in the heart of a bhakta, because bhakti is not karma, bhakti is not jnana, bhakti is bhakti. And of course, it includes in one form the best of all of action and knowledge. It includes a form of action, it includes a form of knowledge, but in its own unique circumference, in its own unique environment. And that's why sometimes we refer to bhakti as the middle path. If we speak in terms of karma and jnana as two extremes, if you will, the extreme of attachment, the extreme of detachment. But bhakti is not about attachment nor detachment. Bhakti is about bhakti. And from bhakti comes a particular type of attachment and a particular type of detachment, which is unique to bhakti as a byproduct of bhakti, not as a very main occupation of a bhakta, but as the consequence of the main occupation of a bhakta, which is bhakti. And for one to practice bhakti, therefore, one should be very careful not to go to these two extremes. As we spoke yesterday, in one presentation we gave of how to upgrade our approach to the four regulative principles, we spoke about the importance of being careful of maintaining this notion of jnana karma anavritam, jnana karma adi anavritam, the part of the definition of uttam bhakti by Sri Rupa Goswami. Our bhakti project should be unencumbered by jnana, karma, and so on, at least to begin with conceptually. Our conception, our initial idea of what we are after in the context of bhakti should be properly dealt with, properly ascertained. So it's important to remain in the middle path, not at the extreme of karma, not the extreme of jnana, but bhakti with its own concomitant, if you will, karma and jnana, or its own concomitant form of action and knowledge, form of attachment and detachment. This is mentioned in the Bhagavatam itself. In one point, the Bhagavatam says, Nanirvinonati Shakto Bhakti Yogo Siddhidaha. So, it's a form of description of an adhikar for engaging in bhakti or for obtaining bhakti siddhi. Bhakti Yogo Siddhidaha. If you want to become a siddha on the path of bhakti yoga, Nanirvino Nati Shakto. So you should not be too much detached, nor you should be too much attached. If you are too much attached, materially speaking, you cannot practice bhakti, because the excessive attachment will insist on you as the center. So it will be too much of a hard pill to swallow for you to accept someone else is the center, and you are to serve that center, to love that center. So too much material attachment will freeze you and won't allow you to move in the context of devotion, because you are too much ingrained into this notion of I, me, mine, and so on. Ammameti. So that will somehow disqualify you for attaining perfection in bhakti. And also, you should not be too much detached, because bhakti is about engaging, Krishna Anushilanam, engaging all your functions, all your senses, all the shaktis of Bhagavan, every atom in this creation, in the context of sadhana bhakti, which has to do with Hrishikena Hrishikesevanam Bhakti Rottama, using our sense for the pleasure of the Lord, the senses. So if you get too much detached, you cannot engage all that in bhakti. So for attaining perfection in bhakti, you should be not too much attached, not too much detached. In relation to matter. Detached enough as to not see matter for your own enjoyment with you in the center, but attached, if you will, enough as to be able to deal with matter, we deal with that particular Shakti, understanding it. This is one Shakti of the Shaktiman, and it's conceived for being used in the service, as of his service, as I am one Shakti to be engaged in that. So this, the beginning part of my answer, which I hope starts to give a glimpse at least of where, in which direction we have to speak in about this. No? So yeah, we are not about becoming hard-hearted. We are not about becoming entangled. but we are about to become devotees. So of course the question may be, okay, Maharaj, I get that point, but again, I'm a grihastha, for example, so I have duties to perform in my particular ashram. I may have wife, children, and so many other things in that connection, house and work and social dynamics. So, and of course, if you accept that particular situation in your life, in order for you to engage, if you will, to be a husband, you have to identify with that duty. If you are zero identified with your duty as a husband, it's difficult that you will become a husband. And if you are to become a father, you have to develop some identification that I am a father. Because if not, you see yourself, you're walking on the street, so many children are there, but you do not identify, I am their father. And therefore, because you are not, and therefore you are not inclined towards acting like a father with them, if you will. But regarding your children, you have to, because, they need a father. And you invited them to come, so you have to, of course, reply to that call with commitment and responsibility. But, so the question is, okay, I have to perform my duties in that particular ashram, and that applies to anyone, not only a grihastha, it applies to monks, sannyasi, and so on. But, so in order to be operative in that particular realm, I have to identify myself with that. So how to identify with my role without becoming attached, if you will? That may be a more nuanced question, for example. How do I identify as a father, mother, and operate accordingly in such a way that is not only not entangling me, but that is enlightening me, is getting me closer and closer to the ultimate goal of bhakti? Because that's our idea. It's not only how do I do stuff so I do not fall in maya. Still, that's some gyan, some scar, some detachment stuff. But how do I do everything in such a way that this attracts me more and more to Krishna? So yes, we have to identify with our particular role in society, but that doesn't mean that we have to identify with that absolutely. We can speak also about degrees of identification, where in which you have to perform certain duty, like when you go to your job and you are expected to be whatever, an accountant or a shopkeeper, whatever may be your job, and you have to identify with that role in order for it to work. But when you go out of your job, hopefully, ideally, you can take some rest from that identification, that identity. And when you arrive home, maybe your child is there, and your identity as a father comes to the fore, which maybe in work was still there, but somewhere else. It didn't have full priority, because if you are too much absorbed in your role as a father, in the midst of your work, you may not be able to perform it properly. But that's still there somewhere, and that comes to the form when you go home. So these are all different senses of identity, which of course ultimately, in the absolute consideration, do not stay with the soul, do not belong to the soul, but are here temporarily, and we have to properly deal with them. And not only that, but we ideally should connect all of them, as temporary as they may be, with an eternal consideration. For that not only to be dharma, for that not only to be, I'm a good man, a good father, a good person in society, and I'm a sattvic, civilized human being who is properly doing their stuff, which is okay, but we are not interested in that, as we also spoke yesterday. Still, for us, sattva-guna is a form of conditioning. To speak only in terms of dharma is a form of kite of dharma. Cheating religion in the name of, in the words of Krishna Das Kaviraj. So how we connect all that with bhakti? So to begin with, no, still, these type of designations, if you want to use that word, sometimes we use the term upadis. Upadi sometimes is translated as limiting adjunct, I'm sorry to get too technical, or let's say designation, a particular sense of identity, which is, again, is not permanent from the eternal perspective. And Shastra over and over says, we need to get free from that. We need to transcend that. So again, what does it mean to transcend? How do we transcend? Because immediately we may come to the idea of rejection and indifference and all these jnana samskaras that may come to the fore. So Shastra says, yeah, Nirupadi, you have to become Nirupadi Vaishnava, Prem Prayacha Nirupadi, Namo Namaste, we pray to Gopishwar Mahadev, Sarvopadi Vinirmuktam, which is a very important verse in which Rupa Goswami based his own definition of Uttam Bhakti. Sarvopadi Vinirmuktam, Tatparatvena Nirmalam, Hrishakena Hrishakesivanam Bhakti Ruchati. So he's saying, you have to be Nirmuktam, not only, that's a very intense line, Sarvopadi. He's not saying only Upadi, but Sarvopadi. And he's not saying muktam, but he's saying be near muktam. Because you can say upadi muktam. You have to get free from upadis. But here it's saying sarva upadi be near muktam. Sarva upadi means all upadis. And muktam means to get free from. Near muktam means to get considerably free from. And be near muktam means like to get totally, absolutely free from all upadis. So it's quite categorical, quite, it may sound even extreme. In order for being engaging successfully in bhakti. And Mahaprabhu himself has his own version, if you will, of this verse, but it's a very interesting and nuanced one, with, if you play out its implications, which are very much in connection to this verse. Mahaprabhu is saying what? Naham vipruna chana repatirna pipa isyunasudro naham varnina chagriha patirna vanasto yatirva Kintu prodhyam nikila pramananda purnam ritabdher gopi bhartu padakamalayor dasa dasa anudasa. Famous one, Bhutta Sudhi, where Mahaprabhu is saying, very interestingly, denying, na 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 na, it sounds quite neti neti verse, I'm not a Brahmin, and so on. I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaisya, I'm not a Sudra, I'm not Sannyasi. I'm not Grihastha, Vanaprastha, nor Brahmachari. I only, if you will, identify myself as Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamalayor Dasa Dasana, the servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of the beloved of the gopis. So somehow this is a very classical depiction of, okay, what I'm not, what I am. Relative designations, eternal identity and potential of the soul. That said, Mahaprabhu says, for example, in this verse, Naham vipro yatir ba. I'm not Brahmin, I'm not sannyasi. Well, actually, he was, if you want to take the situation in a more relative social dynamics, he was Brahmin, he was sannyasi. And not only he was, but if you pay attention to Mahaprabhu's lila, at least to the bigger part of it, not considering when he stops being a public figure and enters into the total madness in the last 12 years in the Gambira, but in the most bigger part of his lila, when he was saying this verse, for example, he says, I'm not a sannyasi, but he was totally respecting the sannyasi etiquette, like nobody. As my Guru Master likes to say, he was such a sannyasi, he was holding up sannyas bow to such a degree that all other sannyasi, including very elder, staunch renunciants, were just trembling and afraid of just seeing the degree of how much he was observing sannyas brata. So that's an interesting point because, again, nobody like him observed sannyas regulations, but at the same time he's saying, I'm not a sannyasi. So that has to do with this question. Now, on one level, you say or you know, I'm not that, but at the same time, you know, on a relative platform, I have to observe and respect certain situations in which I am in, whether it may be as a sannyasi, as a grihastha, with all their corresponding duties. And you do that perfectly, as Mahaprabhu was doing them, but in the heart of hearts, you understand, I'm not that. What I really am is not in permanent connection with that. But that, if you will, is there for some time. And not only I will respect that for avoiding social disturbance, but also I will take, if you will, I will use that, if you want, I will take advantage of that by connecting that with bhakti. So we can be grihasthas or sannyasis or whatever ashram or dharma or varna, in such a way that it can foster our bhakti. And going back to the question, which speaks about attachment and affection, we are expected to be the two. Well, at least you included affection, because I've heard the Buddha sometimes saying we should be detached from our family. But the word affection is not coming, so that's even more problematic. But I will say, in one sense, it's all about semantics. It's all about how we are understanding those terms. Because when we say attachment and affection, in one sense, we could make the two of them synonymous. For example, you are to be attached to your guru. Not materially, of course. And you are to be affectionate towards your guru. Vishrambena Guru Seva. You are to be attached to Sri Krishna. You are to develop affection for him. You are to be attached to the Vaishnavas. You are to be affectionate with them. So the two of them basically imply the other thing, because if you are properly attached to all of them, it implies affection. And if there is affection, it implies a form of attachment. Somehow there is a blur in between these two as well. And of course, attachment and affection can also be synonymous in the material sense of the term. When you have affection for someone in this world on the basis of illusion or avidya, you get attached to those people. But for us, strictly speaking, that's not real attachment and that's not real affection. Because actually, instead of being attached or being affectionate to that person in themselves, you are basically being attached to your own self, or to your own misconceived self being projected through the lens of avidya into a particular environment, and you misidentifying everything. But actually, you are only attached to yourself. As Sukadev Goswami famously said in after the Brahma Stuti, 14th chapter of the 10th canto in the Bhagavatam, after the whole series of 40 prayers of Brahma finished, Sukadev Goswami continues expressing, after Pariksit Maharaj was asking regarding how Krishna, how did it happen that the expansions of the gopas and of the cubs, their respective parents were more affectionate to them and so on. So he mentioned in verse 50, like sarvashama pibhutanam nripasamat satmaiva balabaha itare patyavita dyas tad bala bhatayai bahi. So basically, he's saying there that for every being, the dearest thing is certainly his own self. Although one thing, I love my car, I love my football team, I love so many things. Actually, your most beloved thing is yourself. The dearness of everything, Sukadeva Goswami is mentioning, children, wealth. Now he's saying apatya, which means children, bitta, which means wealth, ittare, other stuff, adya, and so on, is only due to dearness of the self. Balavattaya, which means based on the dearness to oneself, tat. So that's an interesting, very considerable idea. No? When we, again, through false ego, if you will, through avidya, we misread reality and things in terms of ahammameti. I mean mine. So I attach to things thinking they are mine and develop affectionate, but actually I'm just loving myself. I'm not even myself in one sense, but my false sense of self. Although I translate that outwardly and I even think in those terms that I love that person, I love this country, I love this object. But actually you are loving your own extension through which you think you became that thing out of attachment. And that's why this Shastra, in many ways, in many moments, speak about strongly about that type of attachment and that type of affection. Not against all type of attachment and all type of affection. For example, Bhagavatam saying, Dehapatya kaletra disuat maasa inyesu satsapi trastisam pramatunidanam napashyati. Who is describing family members and all these personalities in relation to which one is materially attached, as fallible soldiers. No? Like you may think they are with me like a very loyal companions that will protect me and nourish me for forever, and botanists, and they are fallible soldiers. At any moment, they will leave the battlefield and you will be alone and crushed. In connection, again, not speaking about the persons in themselves, but our own projection of themselves. And even though one sees those things, one is not seeing the botanist saying. Even though in one point, if you speak about the things, they will say, yes, I know, but I don't know. So again, the Bhagavatam is delivering its message on this basis, not trying to understand the goal of life is nirupadika priti, or it, not in the words of Jiva Goswami, nirupadika priti, a type of priti or prem or love, which is nirupadika or nirupadi, free from these upadis, free from its false designations, and instead it's called sopadika priti. Nirupadika priti is the goal, sopadika priti means that which is to be avoided, a type of so-called love full of upadis. But we are after love, again, for its own sake. So that's a very notion. So going back, and sorry if I'm extending myself too much, but I will give time for Namrasa's questions, I promise. So going back to this idea, it's all about semantics, no? Because we can say attachment and affection, and that can be applicable in the realm of bhakti and transcendence and foster our realization, or those can be entangling us. There's another verse very nice from the Brahma Stuti in this case, verse 36. Today we are somehow in that section where Brahma is saying, Tabat raga dayastinas, tabat kara griham griham, tabat mohan grinigado, yabat krishna natejana. I like very much this verse. The Brahma is saying, oh, my Prabhu, until people become your devotees, Javat Krishna Natijana, unless people become your devotees, and he mentions three things. Tabat ragadaya stena. For them, ragada adaya, their material attachments become stena, become thieves. Tabat kara griham griham, their griham, their house, become kara griham, which means a prison house. And tabat mohan grinigado. That's in connection to this. Moha means bewilderment of family affection. That is translated here with the word affection and bewilderment. But again, through the lens of material attachment. So that becomes angri nigada, which means the shackles on foot shackles. So until and unless people become your devotees, Brahma is saying, their material attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. But again, all this is not saying in every case that's the case, but it says until or unless you become a devotee of Krishna, until and unless you see everything else in terms of sambandha, basically. What is condemned here is the lack of sambandha, basically. Sambandha means the knowledge that shows you how everything is related to Krishna in the relationship of dependence. So the implications, the indirect implication in this verse is, if you become a Krishna Bhakta, your desires and attachments are not thieves anymore, but the opposite, are friends. Your homes are not prisons, become ashram, shelter, and your affectionate feeling for family members are not foot shackles, but the opposite of that. That's the potential. That's how much bhakti is powerful. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings like this in his Saranagati. No? Describes how he decorates his house and how his house is no longer his house. No? Again, the problem is how I'm conceiving of my house, family, in terms of my. If I project that on the context of me being the center, being the enjoyer, being the controller, that's the problem. The problem is not with your wife, with your children, with your grandparents, with your work, your car. The problem is the lens you are having while approaching them. And of course, the potential is all of them can be seen in terms of Krishna, in the sense of they can be seen in terms of being a Vaishnavas. And we can relate with them in that case. For example, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami speaks about Suhrid Rati. Because the question may be, okay, Krishna is the object of rasa, the object of bhava and prem. He's the vishaya lambana of one's thai bhava. Now, he's the object of any fixed emotion one may have in transcendence. But what about the feelings between one devotee and another in the spiritual realm? So he said that's called suhritrati, or the affection of a friend. In other words, there is place for loving each other. There is place for having affection among devotees in the context of loving Krishna. Everyone there love Krishna the most, but they love each other so much. So we are to develop that now as sadhakas. It's not that that will happen only being there. And now, if my wife is a Vaishnavi, I don't care for her as a Vaishnavi, I have to get detached from her because whatever. No. I mean, if I have to get attached to seeing her as a Vaishnavi. Of course, they have to be a Vaishnavi. And even if they are not Vaishnavis or Vaishnavas, nonetheless, you can see them in terms of their potential as such and their intrinsic connection with their source, and not to see them as my wife, my object of pleasure and control, my who knows what. So the real problem is with this aham mameti, as you know. That's what allows samsara to keep rolling. But we are to be affectionate among Vaishnavas. And our family, if they are Vaishnavas, they are sadhu sangha. So we have to behave affectionately towards, in the context of sadhu sangha. One of the recommended attributes of sadhu sangha is nigdasya, says Rupa Goswami. You have to be affectionate in sadhu sangha. So if your family is sadhu sangha, there's no problem with being affectionate. As much as you remain aware, this is sadhu sangha. This is not my family. Again, the word my comes into the scene. There are Vaishnavis, Vaishnavas, and we are to, again, sadhu sangha, Napoleon and chair. We are to serve each other, nourish each other. And in that context, if that's in place, that's why it's so important to educate ourselves before turning to action. To have proper sambandha, so proper abideya, proper prayoja comes as a result of that. So we have to, every single day, remind these things, not only in theory, but try to pray for them in our daily sadhana. And try to develop a relationship in prayer with how to develop all the things. And the more you understand this, the more you understand how powerful bhakti is, and you can become attached to a Vaishnava, and there's no problem with that attachment. That's what the Bhagavatam is saying over and over again. For example, in the third canto, Bhagavatam is saying, Prasangama jaram pasham, atmana kabayo vidu, saiva sadhu sukrito, moksha dhanam apabritam. He said, every person who is learned, they will know that what? Attachment for material things is a source of entanglement. Prasangam ajaram pasham. Strong attachment, prasangam ajaram pasham, entanglement. Atmaya kabado vidu. This kabaya vidu, the seers of truth, these learned people, they know what? Saiva, that same attachment, sadhu sukrito, when it is applied, krita, to the sadhus, in sadhu sangha, moksha dwaram apabritam. Apabritam means opened, and moksha dwaram means the doors for liberation. And for us, liberation, as I said yesterday, means ultimately prem. Liberation, even from liberation. So again, attachment is the source of misery, but that same attachment applied in the context of sadhu sangha opens the door for liberation. So the problem is not with attachment in itself or with one's wife or family social situation, but the problem is with how we are directing that particular tendency. So again, be careful. Yeah, we are not promoting becoming cyborgs and hard-hearted people. We are projecting ourselves to the Nara Lila. We want to enter Nara Lila, so there is a lot of humanity that has to be in us and has to remain in us and has to be upgraded in us if we want to enter Nara Lila. So that's a very, very important point to never forget, and to engage everything in the context of Krishna, basically. Just to conclude my answer, that's what Sri Rupa says also when he defines the famous notion of yukta vairagya, anasaktasya visaya yathartham upayunjata nirbandha krishna sambandhin yuktam vairagyam uchyate prapanchikataya budhya hari sambandha vastuna mumukshu viparite go vairagyam phalgun katyate. And he also says the opposite there. So proper renunciation is to see everything, to be attached to everything in the context of Krishna, Krishna Sambandhi, being able to establish a connection with Krishna. So connection with Krishna is there, Sambandhi is there, that will protect me from exploitation, from false sense of attachment and affection. And that will foster the real sense of that. And Falgu Vairagya, false renunciation, is I'm rejecting everything without establishing their connection with Krishna. That's false renunciation. That's renunciation that is unfavorable for bhakti. So we are to engage in proper Vairagya, which is Krishna is in the center, our Ishtadeva is there, Guru Vaishnavs. And if that's in place and we are in place in connection to that, then there's no problem. We can be affectionate, we can be attached, we can express all these type of things that without that proper center becomes a problem. So, anyhow, some thoughts, I hope that helps. And we have one more question, and I think today that will be enough because of the time, from Namarasan. He says, how do we use social media in a responsible way in the context of being a sadhaka? There's always the risk of breaking principles of intoxication or illicit sex. Referring to your talk on the Rex 2.0, some of us have to use it. Okay, so this somehow is connected with today's topic, and of course, more specifically with yesterday's topic. For those who have not seen that presentation, yes, we shared some words last morning, yesterday, about how to upgrade and update our conception and approach to the notion of four regulative principles, and how we may even have to add a fifth one in the name of proper dealings with social media in the context of bhakti, and how not to break those first four while in this fifth realm, if you will, of social media, where you can end up doing all these type of things, intoxication, and as I put it in some way, like masturbating your ego through social media, or being untruthful by giving an image of yourself to the world that is not matching reality, and all these different layers of possibilities. So, sorry. So, of course, the question is how to use social media in a responsible way in the context of being a sadhaka. Well, being a sadhaka already should imply responsibility. No? So if you are a sadhaka, or we want to be a sadhakas, we should immediately understand means that has it's all about responsibility. It's all about commitment. I have a commitment. I have voluntarily established a commitment with the higher spheres, higher realm, and I want to lead a particular lifestyle that is fostering my goal. I want, in the words of Srila Sridhara Maharaj, I want to be a means to my goal. I want my goal to go through me, transpass me, and I want just to be instrumental of that. The goal that has come to my life is such a goal that the most dignified thing I could do is just to be possessed by that, trespassed by that, be a means for that to express itself through me. So sadhaka, there's a lot of beautiful responsibility. You know, we should hopefully attach the word beautiful every time we say responsibility of commitment. Or at least we may not pronounce it, but it's in our mind. Whenever we say responsibility, commitment, hopefully you feel shobhana. Beautiful, because it has the potential of being beautiful. Being sadhaka is a beautiful lifestyle, a beautiful possibility. So social media, how to use that? Of course, so many things, we may need some series of lectures only for that. That's not a bad idea. Let's see what comes with that. And already Namrasa was inviting me to speak on that again. So let's see, we may continue developing that eventually. But yeah, this has again a lot to do with Yukta Vairagya, the last point I mentioned in my previous reply. We should not be attached to seeing social media as something that is there for me, But that's one Shakti of Bhagavan. I mean, that's, for me at least, it's a very protective approach. You know? Whatever comes in front of me, whatever reaches my hands, whether it may be praise, money, technology, possibility for pleasure or whatever, it's important that you immediately translate that as Shakti of Bhagavan. And between brackets you add, and I'm a Shakti of Bhagavan too. So, an all Shakti of Bhagavan is to serve its original source. Parashya Shakti Vividhaiva Shriyate. The Absolute is possessed of potencies, and all of their potencies are in the service of the ultimate energetic one. So technology is one of them. Very subtle energy, even though it may take different gross forms, and it may take most of people to very gross consequences. It's a very subtle thing. I will say it's kind of the reproduction of Kali Yuga, reproduction of mystic powers. In the past, we didn't have technology as we know it today. We didn't have cell phones and stuff, but there were cities and so many psychic accomplishments and perfections, which now gross technology is trying to imitate without having to go through all the tapasya, if you will, that the yogi went through in the past. You don't have to go to a cave for how many times, but you have to just pay and have that mystical stuff in your pocket. But of course, the price for that is generally you end up being a slave of that, because you pay too little, in one sense, for technology to entertain your life, to quote-unquote nourish your existence. You are not paying too much for all that is behind that, but the real price is what comes after that. You end up paying much more. Generally, there are these different sayings that if something is for free, or almost for free, the real price is something else. And generally, the real price is your attention, the real price is your time, your life, if you will, at the end of the day. And especially for us Gaudiyas, we want to take much care of our attention, because that's what we want to offer to Krishna at the end of the day. That's what Krishna's ultimate instruction in the Gita is about. He says, Manmana, give me your mind, give me your attention, make your attention an offering, a suitable offering to me. So the point is, what we are doing with our attention, how we are respecting our attention, how we are honoring our capacity for being attentive in one direction or another. And again, social media can be very damaging in that connection if we do not know how to properly approach it. Again, it's not that social media is bad intrinsically. Again, everything is a Shakti of Bhagavan, so everything has so much potential in so many directions. And again, the idea of responsibility in us is about in which direction do I choose to employ this particular, to interact with this particular Shakti. So we know, we have experience of so many beautiful things that can be done with technology. You yourself, Namrasa, are a living example of that. you keep inviting Vaishnavas to your podcast and through technology, through social media, fostering lots of important ideas and thoughts that may nourish our community and so many other things. But of course, that's not the end of the story in the sense of, but how one is dealing with all that. Because that can be a mixed scenario. It's not that, okay, you can be doing something nice, but in the context of that something nice, some other things not so nice may be happening also. It's not black and white. So you can, anyone, I'm not speaking to Namrasa only, anyone, any of us can do some beautiful things through social media, but also in the midst, in the context that we may become on some level distracted, attached, as I spoke yesterday, addicted even to the principle of dopamine and trying to stimulate this even subconscious sometimes need for anticipation that social media actually is constructed for, at least in the minds of those who of many of those who are involved with that. Again, we as Vaishnavas are seeing social media in a different way, like the creators of social media are seeing social media. It's not the creator of social media thinking, okay, this is part of the Shakti of Bhagavan, so we are trying to give it a particular shape so we can facilitate further service in the world. Generally, that's not the principle behind it. But that's still the principle. I mean, that's the actual fact, which they are not seeing. But we as Vaishnavas have the particular worldview to see everything in that connection. So even though someone created social media with a totally distorted idea in mind, still we as Vaishnavas can take that and give it its proper use, connect it with its source. But again, as much as we have that intention, as much as we are aware of that intention in us, we will be successful in that. Because if not, in the name of, you know, engaging everything in the service of Krishna, secretly, if you will, confidentially or subconsciously, we may be directing some stuff to our own service, you know, to our full sense of centerness, you know, being the center. So again, it takes lots of responsibility, and I will recommend for devotees to be careful of that, to be introspective about that, to observe themselves, to take some time, some distance, and to see how they react in that connection, and to also be disciplined, and not be carried away by the need to just over-justify your relationship with social media. As I always like to say, don't forget that there won't be social media in Golok Vrindavan, and you are aspiring to enter there for eternity. So I hope you still choose to go there without social media. In other words, better you start to conceive a life without social media now than just... and with this I mean, at least for me is helpful sometimes, make some fasting from social media, some moments. And some moments, it's relative to each one's level of entanglement with that. For some people, the level of detachment from social media is, do not check your cell phone as the very first thing you do when you wake up in the morning. If you wake up in the morning, hopefully. No, do not make that the very first ritual of your day. No, just open your eyes, open your cell phone. Even before you open your eyes, you are already like, grabbing your cell phone, and then you open your first, grab your cell phone, then you open your eyes. Try to imagine the level of priority you're giving to that. No? So it sounds easy, but I know that for many people that's not so easy. Try to, first of all, try to order your priorities. And I know some people already get this false sense of, but maybe there is something important going on that I need to check. Maybe there is some emergency. But what's the real emergency is that you wake up and the first thing you do is you glorify Krishna, you offer pranam to your guru, you remember them. That's the topmost emergency. You are in very need, in extreme need of that. There's something important going on, yes. There's something important going on in Krishna consciousness, and you still are not fully riding that wave. So the important thing, the emergency stuff, most always is bhakti. That's our priority. All other so-called emergencies and important things can wait. I mean, of course, if your house is on fire and you have to do something, get my point, please. So for some people, that will be that. Do not make taking your phone the first, very first act or the last act of your day. Try to start and close your day in connection with your source. And from that, you start to construct different levels of detachment in order to see yourself, how do you react when that's not there. Because again, we can say, we can render lip service to this idea. Yeah, I use technology for the service of Krishna. I'm attached only to that. Okay, so if you are only attached to service of Krishna, you can serve Krishna without use of social media because you are attached to serving, not to serving through social media. So that's an important point because again, social media won't be there for eternity. So you can, I like, for example, I was not able to do this last karting because I had some engagements, but I hope if with your blessings I may be doing that. During karting, I try to cut off all social media during the whole month. And to see myself, the real epiphany is, how do I react to that? What's going on? To see what has been going on in the underlying underworld of my consciousness when I was using that, when I may say to myself, it's okay, I'm not attached. It's I continue like any. So when you take that off, what happens? Some cold turkey is coming there. Of course, for some people, 1 month may be death or maybe too extreme. So everyone has to find some shoes that is fitting them. Not to take some day, only one ekadasi or some hours per day. Like you may say, okay, I won't check that after. Till first I will chant my rounds. I will get bathed. I have bath. I will put my tila, whatever. But and see yourself. How do you react to that? And that will help to create some particular contrast and level of dependence on that. And that will give you a clearer picture of what you need to work on that. Because again, we don't want to become used by that. We want to use that in this, not for us, but in sacred service. So we want to take care of the quality of our offering. So again, all this has to be with responsibility. A lot of responsibility has to do with I want to become aware of the reality of things. So I can take proper responsibility. Because if you are not even grasping the dimension of the situation, of the shortcoming, if you are not actually aware of what's really going on, how can you act responsibly in connection to that? First, you have to diagnose the degree of gravity, if you will. So sometimes these type of situations or adjustments help you to realize what's actually going on and not only what you think is going on. That's why we need to be tested. We need to be challenged. And sometimes it's helpful that we ourselves put ourselves forcibly in a sustainable way, not neurotic forcibliness, but in the context of some tapasya, as Srila Prabhupada will say, voluntarily acceptance of some discomfort for the sake of spiritual advancement. That's the very first word that Brahma heard, as you know, tapas, tapas. That's what the world is about, basically. He was trying to find his source. He was trying to understand what to do, how to take proper responsibility in my life. And the only thing that came as a result was tapas. In other words, entering to that fire. Tapas means fire. It will burn. Tapas may have to do with pratyahara. Try to take your senses out from their objects and try to turn inward and see what happens. See what happens in every sense. Not only I will see the color lights and will hear Krishna's flute. Maybe those things won't happen in the beginning. The beginning thing will be cold turkey, abstinence. My mind is... So that will be an epiphany in itself. That may be the first epiphany you need to have to realize the degree of your entanglement and attachment. And on the basis of that, not getting over-identified with that, not getting discouraged by that, but having a clear picture of, okay, this is the situation. This is the, again, diagnosed situation. So how to act in a sustainable way so I can improve myself in connection to that gradually. And again, yes, I'm sure that most people, I'm not promoting at all, stop using social media. I mean, if I say that, I'm not walking the talk myself. But yes, we have to use that responsibly. And of course, it's delicate because it's a tool that generally is conceived to promote exactly the opposite, not responsibly, even though they may promote it as such. But whoever has that thing in their hands or pockets generally is creating total lack of control of the situation. Even though you think you are in control, that's the whole paradox. It gives you the sense, I'm in control, but actually you are in the less self-control situation you may conceive, especially when you think you are in control. So that's the paradoxical experience that generally technology, social media is performing. It comes to your life offering their services, if you will, to you in a very, loyal way, nice way, and you feel I'm in control, I can do whatever I like, but actually the real situation there is you are serving that, you are a slave of that, and you are not in control, you are totally, and one of the ways you can taste that is try to take some distance from that and realize the degree of addiction, and most people will realize some degree of that is there. So I think it's a healthy exercise. Each one has to use their own intelligence to realize that. So again, you update and upgrade your relationship with technology and with social media in a way that it remains respectful. We are not only to honor and respect our attention, but we are to honor and respect social media. Because again, it's an expression of one Shakti of Bhagavan. And we want to be respectful and venerate and connect everything with its source. Every Shakti, Maya Shakti included, and all its expressions. Because that's in the service of Bhagavan. So social media is not an exception of the rule. It's a very unique expression of Maya Shakti. Very subtle, very Maya-like expression of Maya Shakti. So we are to be very careful. It's like if you are approaching one of the most refined and powerful and influential faces of illusory energy. So you won't take that for granted. You will approach that in a very, with awe and reverence. All the Aishwarya you have, turn that in that direction. Every time you open your cell phone, you sit in front of your computer, you can have even some picture of Mahakali next to your computer or something. Or like the background picture in your cell phone to remind you, what's this about? No, what's actually this about? You can even put some message there to remind you about what you are about to do, whom you are about to connect with, and how to do that again, remaining aware. Maybe in the midst of using that, you may become distracted, but at least if you begin with some preliminary engagements and tips, if you will, tricks, for you to remain as aware as possible of what's actually going on, for sure that will increase the quality of your engagement with social media and technology during, while you are doing that, and after doing that. And yeah, try to have some, even some fixed times when you do not over-engage in that. And as you try to be responsible with social media, understand you have so many other responsibilities outside social media that you have to take care of. So that may also help us a lot to understand how to properly balance them. Because if not, social media may swallow all your sense of responsibility, and actually you will end up being irresponsible even in the realm of social media, what to speak outside of it. And again, our ultimate prospect lies outside of the scope of social media. We project to eternal life without social media, but with full responsibility. So we now, okay, we deal with social media, but with responsibility and with a type of responsibility in such a way that whenever I need to be responsible without social media, I can remain responsible. I can continue committing myself to life without the need of only expressing that through social media. To the point that, again, I can live without it. And I use it because that may be useful and needed in some situation, but the situation comes that it's not possible to deal with that. My sense of commitment and responsibility remains intact, expressing itself in so many other avenues. And again, it's easier said than done, but we have to begin saying it at least, and we have to try to implement this in practice today. Not creating some false sense of, yes, that I understand, but not now, let's see when. That will never happen. Because in the future, but the point is that the future is being promoted or manufactured by what you are doing in the present. So if you think like this in the present, it means you will think like that in the future. If you change your thinking in the present, that will change your thinking in the future. So it's important not to cheat ourselves in these type of things and try to embrace responsibility, beautiful responsibility, beautiful commitment in the here and now. Especially in connection with social media. So anyhow, some thoughts, Namrasa. I hope that helps, and Namrasa is requesting a series of lectures on this topic. So thank you so much for your encouragement. That may be a good way of myself purifying myself in connection with my usage of social media, and a good way of properly honoring. And that's a good, I'll think about that. I'll consider, I think in today's answer also some points came that of course will be also worthy of further expansion. So with this type of reply, we may be able to to unfold into a series of a few lectures. So let's see what comes with this. Maybe also we can speak about that in the future also together, as you suggested, different ways, so many ways, and so much necessity of that, because again, social media is part of the zeitgeist, is one of the main symbols of the climate of the present times. I mean, we are in the digital age. The very age may be described in terms of that. So, of course, we need to know. And of course, Shastra is not speaking about that specifically, because Shastra has been revealed not in the digital age. Although the gist of how to deal with digital stuff today is given in Shastra, because these principles go beyond what's going on in each age. But how that takes place, how to implement that in practice, I mean, we may not be able to quote shlokas from Shastra in that connection in the ultimate specific way, but we need to know what to do. And so, again, thank you for the question, and thank you for the encouragement for some possible series in the service of the Vaishnavas, in the service of social media, and our Bhakti project. So thank you so much to all of you for your presence and time, and hope to see you next Friday. Again, as I mentioned, at least for one more month, we will continue meeting each other every Friday at this same time. When I will be traveling to the US, that may get interrupted by some other series of lectures in English, which also will be, of course, shared. So somehow or other, we will keep in touch. So again, my pranam to all of you. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Priman Haribo.